copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My name's Chip Zimmer. I work with a group called Relational Wisdom based in the United States. And Relational Wisdom is all about helping people build good relationships so that hopefully they don't find themselves in difficult conflict and having to really dig out a relational mess. And if they do find themselves struggling relationally and in conflict, they'll have some tools. They'll be better equipped to be able to actually work through their difficulties. Ken Sandy, who founded Relational Wisdom in 2012, founded a group called Peacemaker Ministries prior to that. Some of you may be familiar with that or with a book called The Peacemaker, which has been around for 26, 27 years now, which is an attempt to take the Bible and organize it in a way to help people resolve conflicts in a biblically faithful manner. And so most of the experience, I've worked with Ken off and on since 1983 on various projects. Most of the experience that we have comes from all of the work we did as conflict mediators in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases working with people. And so a lot of that gets packed into relational wisdom. But also, as you'll see, we brought a lot of emotional intelligence into it. Emotional intelligence, EI, is a fairly new field. It's becoming much more well-known around the world. And so the title here is Using Fascination with EI as a Doorway to Evangelism. And we'll get that into that in a second. Before I start, how many of you were here for the empathy workshop the other day? Anybody take part in that? Okay, great, thank you. So there was a workshop on empathy the other day. I'm not going to worry about that or talk about that, except to say that empathy, which is where we attempt to understand what the other person is experiencing, to feel what they're feeling, to think the thoughts that they're thinking. We're really crawling inside of the way that they look at the world. That's what empathy is. And there are two types. One is based on emotions that come to us where we just almost intuitively sense what it is that they're feeling. And literally, there are what are called mirror neurons in our brains that respond. When we see someone reacting emotionally, the same neuron that is firing in their brain fires in our brain as well. And so we experience internally the same feeling of what they're feeling. Amazing stuff. This is all part of God's creation. So there's this affective or emotionally based empathy, but there's also what's called cognitive empathy, which is where we take the perspective of someone, where we try to understand what they're doing. And the reason I'm raising this is that because this is a great skill, being able to be empathetic and to understand the other person's point of view from the inside, from what they're actually experiencing, is something that can really help us build relationships, solve problems, work more effectively and closely with people. So that's empathy. It's part of what it means to be emotionally intelligent, okay, which is what we're going to get into. So how many of you have heard of the term emotional intelligence? Everybody. How many of you have taken a course or read a book or an article or something like that on it? At least to the point where you could begin to explain, you know, what it is. Okay, not nearly as many. So here's what we're going to do. Here's the roadmap. Here's where we're going to go. I'm first going to talk a little bit about EI. I'm just going to abbreviate it EI, emotional intelligence, because it takes less time to say. I'm going to talk a little bit about it, define what it is, talk about its strengths, talk about its weaknesses. So that'll be sort of the first part of the conversation that we have, the reflection that we do together. Then I'm going to raise a concern for Christians about the way EI is presented out there in the world. Most of the work on EI has been done by psychologists, behavioral scientists, and there's a lot of really good stuff there, but it's missing one key component, and that is that there is no God anchor. God is not part of the way emotional intelligence, EI, is constructed or how it's thought about. And so this missing piece is huge for us as Christians, Because EI otherwise is just self-referential. Whatever I want to do, whatever my values are okay. And I want to develop my social skills, my emotional intelligence, in order to be able to advance myself, my values, what's important to me. As a Christian, of course, there's nothing wrong with wanting to have our concerns be out there as part of the agenda, but we are God's people, and we are to live differently before Him in relationship with others. It's not just about myself. It's about serving the Lord and loving Him, and then out of that basis, that foundation, serving and loving others. So I'm going to present that. We'll talk a little bit about that, because that actually provides an opportunity to begin to open a door to evangelism if the opportunity is present to talk about emotional intelligence or relational skills, whatever the venue is that you find yourselves in. And then the final thing we're going to do is actually look at some things specifically that we can do that allow us to raise and begin a conversation about emotional intelligence. So that's sort of the pathway that we'll be on this afternoon. And let me start talking about EI by telling you a story of failure. And I know this story really well because it was my failure. When I was younger and more foolish than I am today, I used to be a tennis coach. Now, in the United States, athletics at the university level is a really big deal. It is a multi-billion dollar industry. And I was a tennis coach at a big university. We had had quite a bit of success as a regional program. And after 4 or 5 years as a regional program, I felt we had the basis, the foundation to really expand and become nationally competitive. So I went to talk with my boss, the director of athletics, and over a period of months, I convinced him that this was worth doing, that we really did have the foundation, the attractiveness, that we could build a program that would have a national reputation. Okay, national recognition, of course, great for me, great for the university, because athletics and university reputations go hand in hand in the U.S. And it's really, really important. So he agreed that he was going to increase my budget. And I was looking forward to the day when I'd actually start having that money to begin to work with. And then the day came where the budget was passed out. Back then, we didn't have internet. It was just some papers that were shoved in your mailbox. And I took a look at it. And to my shock and horror, my budget was actually a little bit less than it had been the year before. I was furious. I felt utterly betrayed. I felt disrespected. He had, I believed, promised that my budget, my ability to grow this program was going to be increased, and he had made a commitment to it. And so I quickly made an appointment to go in and talk with him, and I did. And when I spoke with him, I was mad. And I let my anger and frustration come through in the way that I addressed him. My tone of voice, the words that I used, accusing him of betrayal, okay, of not following through on his commitments. All of that was part of what I conveyed, my displeasure. It was pretty clear. I was not a happy guy. And as I was in there, I could pick up as I looked at him, and I realized this especially after the fact, that he was becoming much more rigid. Any smile on his face had vanished. His tone of voice dropped. He became himself defensive and angry at me. And we had a very unsatisfying conversation that finally ended with him saying to me, "Look, if you don't want to coach here anymore, that's fine. I will find somebody else. I'll replace you." And with that, our conversation ended. Now, that is what I would call an emotionally unintelligent conversation. Okay. I was solely focused on me. I allowed my emotions to control me. I allowed my emotions to dictate my words. You know, Jesus says that out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. You could pretty well guess what was going on in my heart at that point. And not only that, I paid no attention to him. not only was I using this opportunity to just simply vent, as we say, to just simply unload on him all my frustration with him and with the athletic department, but I could tell he said things, for example, that income projections had changed and he didn't have any choice. Okay. There were some other things that he said as well that I didn't recall at the time. But I wasn't interested in exploring his concerns. I didn't care about his concerns. All I cared about was mine. And so what I did was not only tell him what I think, but I put a huge distance between us. Remember, this is the guy that I have to convince. If I want to actually do anything with this program at this university, I've got to have him on my side. And he was no longer on my side. Okay? It created some real difficulties in our relationship. And it took me a long time to work that through and to get back to the point where we were eventually able to begin to build the program. Okay? But I learned a lot. I learned a lot about the power of words and the words that we choose, the way we speak, and the impact that that can have on other people. And so I'm going to be showing a few videos as we go through here that demonstrate things. So with this first video, it's all about words. As you'll see, there are two different sets of words that are presented. And the first set doesn't have much impact. The second set has a very different impact. And so as you look at this, I'd like you to be asking, as you see especially what that second set of words is, and the video will be self-explanatory, what's going on? Why the difference? Okay, what difference did those words make? All right, that's the assignment. Let's take a look at it. Change your words, change your world. Man, that's so true, isn't it? And it ought to be something that characterizes us as Christians. The words we choose, the words we use, have huge impact on people. What was different? What did those second words do? What kind of impact did they have that the first set of words didn't have? Any thoughts on that? Any opinions? I'll tell you what I think. With the first set of words, as I was putting myself in the position of someone passing by, the emotion that I experienced was sympathy or pity. And I know from my own life that oftentimes I'll be sympathetic about things, but it doesn't really move me to action. But with that second set of words, it's a beautiful day. And did you notice it was not a very beautiful day? It was a cloudy day. From the accents, I think they're in Ireland, maybe?
Scotland.
Scotland, is it Scotland? Okay, thank you. I'm not, you know, obviously, you were Scottish. Okay, great, thank you. In Scotland, well, it's a rainy day, or at least a cloudy day in Scotland. But can you imagine, if you can't see even a cloudy day, even a rainy day, if you have all of a sudden the gift of sight, it's going to be a beautiful day. Right? And I think what happened on that second set is that there was something that people who went by began to feel inside. There was a sense of empathy, okay, of experience of what this man is going through, what its life must be like. What is it like for it to be a beautiful day and for me not to be able to see it? We talked about in the other day in the workshop how there's a strong link between empathy and compassion. Compassion is when we're deeply concerned about someone, so much so that we want to, we're often motivated to do something to try to alleviate their suffering or to do something about their struggle. And empathy, being able to be on the inside of what they're experiencing, often leads to compassion. And compassion often leads to action. We tend to act more out of compassion and out of the desire to express that compassion lots of times than we do out of sympathy or out of pity. And somehow that was captured by those words. So that's what I think. That's my read on it. Anything that you all would like to add to that?
I
How did it impact you? Were you more moved by the second set of words? Yeah, I was too. It's really interesting, isn't the power of words to influence us? Okay. And it can be used for good, and it can also be used for evil, for sinful purposes. Okay. That's one of the downsides of relational skills, isn't it? That they can be manipulated and they can be misused. Well, I said at the outset that interest in EI is rising all around the world. Before coming over here about 3 weeks ago, I went on Google and just Googled emotional intelligence to see how many results I would get. 47 million. 47 million results when I type in emotional intelligence. And just for fun, I did emotional intelligence Poland, 506,000 results that brought those two together. And that's pretty common. That's pretty true, especially in Europe and some of the countries that have more links to this sort of recent training. Less so in other parts of the world, but it's just growing all around the world. Why? Emotional intelligence, we really just mean social skills, what used to be called social skills. People who listen well, people who communicate effectively, people who are concerned about others, who manage their own lives well, who are responsible, who are accountable, okay, who find ways to serve other people, concerned about other people, work well in teams. All of those kinds of skills are today what make up this body of what's called emotional intelligence. In the old days, we just called them relational skills, or my ability to work well in a group, work well with other people. And the reason it's become so popular, so much so that even a lot of corporations are doing training programs. They're investing tens of thousands of dollars in training their leaders and their staff to be more emotional intelligent. Why? Because it helps the bottom line. It helps them to be more profitable. Because if you have better integrated staff that are getting along, there's going to be less turnover. It's going to be less conflict among staff members that are going to drain time. They're going to be able to relate to customers more effectively. They're going to make more sales. All of these things are just very impactful in the private sector. In government, a lot of governments are now bringing EI into the training programs because they want their people, especially those that face toward the public, to be able to serve the public more effectively. And even with some graduate schools in the United States, one of the exams now that they have people take before being admitted, like to business graduate schools, they want to know not only how smart you are, what kind of grades you got, but also, can you get along with other people? Because they're finding just how much that matters in being successful and in helping to build a business. So, what is EI? This is a definition that comes from a really good book, by the way, that I recommend, called Emotional Intelligence, by a guy named Dan Goleman, G-O-L-E-M-A-N. I don't know if it's in languages other than English, but it's worth looking up if you're interested in learning more about EI. He first wrote this book, I believe, back in the mid-90s, and he himself is a psychologist and has done some research in emotional intelligence, but he's writing for the popular press. It's easy to understand. There are lots of interesting facts, tidbits, and recommendations for how we can all be more emotionally intelligent. And this is how he defines it: the ability to identify, assess, and manage the emotions of oneself, of others, and of groups. That's all there is to it. Identify, assess, and manage emotions. So identify. That means I'm recognizing in myself and in others, what is the emotion that they are experiencing? Okay. This is actually surprisingly hard. If you've never spent any time trying to recognize what emotion you are currently experiencing, when you start doing that for the first time, it can be really tough. And for me, for example, when I started first taking a look at this, I could identify about three. Okay, I'm happy, I'm sad, or I'm angry. That was about it. We actually went through the dictionary and looked up words that have emotional content and came up with over 100 words that convey different nuances, different slices of emotion. And the more we can understand what our emotions are, the better we're going to be able to assess them. And we assess them in two aspects. One is, where does it come from? Why am I angry? What is it that is bothering me, that is provoking this emotion within me? But then we also need to assess in terms of, if I act on this emotion, what's the likely outcome? What am I likely to do? What am I likely to say? And that gets into this third part about managing myself. And then doing the same thing with other people, using our powers of observation, using some of the skills that we have to listen, to ask questions, to read, not just hear what the words say, but to read what the body says, whether the face is smiling or frowning, you know, whether there are tears, whether the body is tense, that tells us that there's a real sense of anxiety about what's happening, whether the person is relaxed, whether they're paying attention or they're looking off or checking their cell phone, you know, whatever it might be. All those kinds of things help us begin to identify what's going on in others, to assess it, to get a sense of, so what's likely happening in their lives, and then how can I manage that? How can I make use of what I'm picking up from them in order to build relationships, in order for me to be more effective in my relationship with them? So that's just a basic definition of emotional intelligence. Any questions on that? Pretty broad, hard to do lots of times, but okay. So the way that Goleman likes to think of this is by having four boxes this way. And that first box, that top line, those two boxes, he calls personal competence. How well can I take care of myself, basically? And he divides this into two different quadrants. The first is self-awareness. That's just what I was talking about. What are the emotions that I'm experiencing right now? What is it that I'm feeling? And then, what do I do to manage that well? Because I have to make a choice. If I'm experiencing an emotion that's not going to be helpful, I can go ahead and act on that emotion, or I can figure out a way to be able to work more productively. And then the bottom part, social competence, that's social awareness. What's happening in the other person, or what's happening in the group? And then relationship management, is it how do I use that knowledge then in order to be able to build and further the relationship with the skills that some of the skills I mentioned, listening well, asking good questions to find out what's important to the other person. Okay, making sure that in my own life, I'm saying the words I want to say in the way I want to say them, that I'm being accountable. If I say I'm going to do something, I follow through. Okay, I'm being reasonable. I'm taking responsibility. If I've done anything, to take responsibility for it. All of these kinds of things that go into building relationships are part of what it means to be an emotionally intelligent person. That, by the way, is exactly what I didn't do in my conversation with my athletic director. I did not identify my emotions. I was totally self-unaware of what I was experiencing, and I went in and I failed utterly to manage myself. And the result was a really difficult relationship that made my life harder, because I no longer had a friend. I had someone who was very much questioning about whether or not I was the right person to stay in that position. And then the social competence, I completely blew that off. I did not pay at all any attention to what he was going through. In retrospect, I could see from his facial expressions and from his tone of voice and the words he used that there was a lot going on inside him. But I never bothered to explore, to find out, you know, what is it that's happening with you? What is it that caused you to make this decision and to change my budget around from what you said it was going to be? And then find a way to work productively with that. So as I've thought about that little incident and the impact that it had in my life, my relationship, I would handle it differently today. First, on the personal competence side, self-awareness, my initial response, anger, resentment, frustration, feeling as though I was disrespected, get over it, okay? Get over it. This is what's happening. I need to speak with him. I personally think I would have wanted to express disappointment. which would have been very reasonable. Maybe I could have even said, you know, I'm a little frustrated because I understood you made this promise to me, and then you're going to make a change, but you didn't talk with me ahead of time. I would have found it really helpful if I'd known ahead that you weren't going to be able to make the change. I might have been able to say something like that, but I would have done it in a way that was trying to build relationship with him, okay, that got all of the venom, all of the emotion out, and instead expressed legitimate disappointment, which there was there, and legitimate frustration, but in a way that could work, that he could work with, rather than just taking him and pushing him up against the wall. And then on the social awareness, I could tell, you know, I'm sure he was embarrassed. I'm sure he was feeling disappointed himself. I could have simply gone into that by saying something like, you know, I'm guessing it must have been hard for you to make this decision, especially after we talked about you and you're increasing my budget. So I just want to understand, you know, what was driving you? What was it that caused you? What pressures are you under? So that I understand better and know how to think about this, because it caught me by surprise. That might have really opened him up to be able to share with me. And I, being me now, I probably would have said something like, you know, and maybe there's even a way that I can find, if you'll tell me how I can help, that I can help you actually raise the revenue for the program as a whole. And perhaps some of that revenue could come into my little dinky tennis program. That would have conveyed my displeasure, but it would have also built relationship to the point where we could work together. And that second way of doing it would have been much more emotionally intelligent, right? It would have been self-aware, which leads to self-management, would have been socially aware, aware of him and what he was going through, and then trying to find a way to work successfully to him, to have a managed relationship. That makes sense? Okay, everybody can see that. EI, as it's currently constructed, has strengths and benefits. Okay, and there's a lot of really good stuff. I want to make sure you're hearing me say there's a lot that's worth reading and learning about emotional intelligence. There are some really good skills. There are some really good values that are embedded in it. Just from where I sit, it's incomplete. Okay, so some of the strengths and benefits, I've already talked about it, improved job performance and income, increased creativity and team building, okay, higher stress tolerance, okay, one of the things they say is you'll have a happier life because you'll have better relationships, you won't spend as much time in arguments, okay, I'm sure you can think of other things, relational benefits from building strong relationships and using those skills. But it also has weaknesses and deficits. Okay? Has weaknesses and deficits. One of the big things is that people who are very sensitive, people who are really concerned about others, will often primarily seek to compromise in order to preserve relationships. In other words, even if they feel strongly about something, even if there's something that really ought to happen, because I don't want to distance you from me, I'll compromise. I'll say, okay, we can do that, or we can do this much. And that's not necessarily a wise direction to go, especially for Christians. So we need to watch out for that. Somebody who's really good with emotional skills, and this is a term that gets thrown around a lot in the United States these days, and not just by our president, by a lot of other people, and I understand that it's also becoming prevalent in Europe, is to just simply denigrate what someone says is fake news. That's fake news. And there is a whole emotional package that goes along with that. Okay? So that's something that can be used for, but in a negative way. It deflects critical thinking. Okay, and keeps us from having conversations by just dismissing our opponents. Also, as I said, there's no moral center. Everyone is encouraged to do what's right in their own eyes. Okay? And that's a real problem for us as Christians. The reason that I want to learn social skills, according to EI, is because I'll earn more income. This is the appeal that they make if you're going through a course. Earn more income. Be more respected. have greater influence, be promoted, advance in your job, have a better marriage, okay? Be in a position where you can actually exert some influence in your community or in your church, whatever it might be. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things. In and of themselves, they're certainly useful tools that we can use. If I'm in a position of having greater influence, I can use that for God's glory. So in and of itself, it's not bad. But this is where we can get into trouble. And that is that because there's no moral center, it's whatever values, whatever I would like to accomplish is the agenda that I put on the table. And at its worst, what this does then is that it slips into manipulation. And rather than wanting to build relationships in order to be of loving and serving toward the other person, I build a relationship so that I can use them to accomplish my purposes. Use them to accomplish what I want without at all caring for what's important for them. And that's just manipulation. And it's real easy for people with strong social skills and the wrong set of motivations to slip into this. Okay, so it's something that we really want to be watching out for. I work for a group called Relational Wisdom, and one of the things that we've tried to do is to take a lot of the good stuff, not only from EI as it's presented out there in the secular world, but also from the Bible, and begin to bring that to bear on this. So Relational Wisdom, what we're trying to help figure out how to do is, how do we bring our faith into all of this? How do we bring God into the mix? First of all, the Bible provides a clear moral compass. So the kind of manipulation that we run the risk of slipping into, if we're just focusing on managing other relationships, that should put if not an effective stop, at least a speed bump, so that it causes us to think twice before we go in a particular direction. Okay? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight. And that's really what this is about. So we want to think not just of being emotionally intelligent, but of being relationally wise, of really serving God and serving other people, as well as caring for our legitimate needs. Those are all good things. And the way that we go about thinking about this then is to bring a third relationship into it. Not only myself, okay? And managing myself, not only others in managing others, but bringing God into the picture as well. Love the Lord. This is relational wisdom. Okay, this is what it means to us. Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." Okay? That's what it means to live in a relationally wise way. And that goes way beyond emotional intelligence. EI doesn't talk about love. EI probably primarily talks about management. Manage myself, manage other people. Why? So that some good things happen in my life. As Christians, we love God, we love others, and we love ourselves. Those are the three same relational elements there. Why? Because this is who God calls us to be. There will be side benefits that come from living this kind of life, both possibly here, certainly in the hereafter, when we stand before Him someday and give an accounting of our lives, to be able to say, "Lord, I loved you, I loved others, and I cared for myself as well." All three of those are important elements in being able to live a relationally wise life. And this really gets into the first big area where we have an opportunity to bring an evangelizing element into a conversation about relational wisdom, is that we can look for places where bringing God and the values that we have as Christians into the conversation. So we, rather than having those four quadrants that EI uses, we think of it in terms of a circle. And you can see over on our left here, self-aware. Okay, that just means I understand what's going on in me. What emotions am I feeling? What thoughts am I having? And then what do I do about it? Okay, how do I manage myself? How do I engage those thoughts and those understandings that I'm achieving? And then the same thing over with other aware. What's going on with them? Okay, that's just the social competence scale now. What's going on with them? What can I observe? And then what do I do about it? If I had known that my athletic director was under the kind of pressure subsequently that I found out he was under, I should have responded in a very different way, especially as a Christian. Okay? I could have done something entirely different. Why? Not because I want to manipulate him. I'd love him to give me more money. But because that's who God calls me to be. Right? I'm loving God, loving self, loving other people. That's who I am. And that gets into that top element there. Being aware of what God calls us to in our relationships. And then actually being determined to live that out as I look at myself and as I look at other people. Now let me just stop there and see if everybody's tracking on this, because I'm moving pretty quickly through emotional intelligence and now on to relational wisdom. All I'm doing is I'm just taking what EI features and we're just bringing eternal values, eternal perspectives in there. And so, you know, the title of this workshop is Using Fascination with EI to Open Up Opportunities to Evangelize. And if you have an opportunity to talk about social skills or to talk about emotional intelligence, this is one of the first places where it can be put into effect. Is that, what are the values? Why is it important to you? What do you want to accomplish by learning better social skills? What would you like to see happen in your life and the lives of others? And to listen to what someone has to say. So lots of times what they'll want are really good things, and we can applaud that, we can uphold that. But then as a Christian, we can also add our own concerns. You know, I think that it's really great that you would like to be able to serve this business more effectively, that, you know, for you to be able to earn more income, wonderful. I hope that happens. Let me tell you, there's another thing, and I agree with all of that. There's something else that matters to me, though, and that is, as a Christian, I know I want to love and serve the people that God puts in my path, and I really see developing the skills as being a way to accomplish that as well. And so just with that kind of conversation, where it's appropriate, we can begin to bring an evangelistic element into a conversation about developing social skills. That's probably one of the biggest opportunities right off the bat. But a lot of it will depend, how much we can do and how well we can do it, will depend on the relationship. It will depend on the context, because not all relationships are ready to have Christ introduced in the way that I just described. But we do know that everyone has values. Everyone operates out of a core of values. We make decisions, we speak, we behave, all the things we do, because there's something beneath that that's important to us to accomplish. Okay? I earn money. I work hard. Why? So that I'm able to take care of my family well. Care for family, that's a value. And it's not just limited to Christians. Non-Christians, unbelievers, care about their families, right? They care about their communities. They care about the environment. A lot of good values are out there. And so what we can do, it may not be appropriate to talk about God, but it may be entirely appropriate to share values. Okay? That I'm managing myself and I'm working with other people well because there are certain values that are important to me. You know, a great question is, you approach the end of your life, what do you want your legacy to be? What's your legacy? What are you leaving behind? Now, people have a lot of wealth. Oftentimes, they think in terms of making donations. You know, they build a hospital wing that has their name on it, or they contribute to their university, and it becomes a so-and-so school of business or whatever. Okay, but most of us, when we think of legacy, we think in terms of the impact we have had on people's lives, of the difference that we have made in their life because we lived and because we interacted with them, we engaged with them, our children, our family members, our community. Those are values. And this is a wonderful opportunity if we're talking about social skills and how we're going to apply them, how we're going to make use of them in our context. We can just simply talk about the values. You know, I want to be skilled socially. I want to be able to listen better to my wife. Why? Because she matters to me. You know, this is a relationship that's important to me, and that's a value that I hold. That's a value. And unbelievers will say those sorts of things. And sometimes it's enough just to be able to get on the same page as far as values go, without even talking about where those values come from. But at some point, the values will be different enough, okay, that it begs the question, why are you staying late again? You're not getting paid for being here. Why are you doing this? And then it's an opportunity to talk about, I'm doing it because I believe this is what God has called me to do. You know, it's part of my faith to make this kind of follow through on the job that we're working on. And I know I'm not going to benefit in terms of money. I'm just doing it because my sense, this is how God has called me. And that's a value that I uphold, to work as hard as I can and as excellently as I can to serve this company. So even here, when we're talking about values, there are ways to begin to raise this as an idea and as a concern. Okay, and perhaps, should the door open somewhere down the road, to be able to actually expand that into talking about my faith. And so much, as I said, depends on the relationship. So much depends on the context of where you are. And as you're just getting to know someone, it may not even initially even be able to get into values. You may be sort of pre that point. But it's somewhere down the line, as you share ideas or share articles or skills with one another, probably values can come into the mix. And as you get to know them better, become friends, and have a sense of collegiality, values may come into it. So that's the second big place. This is sort of a backing away from the more direct, I'm a Christian, here's what I believe, into here are the values that are important to me, what values are important to you. So two opportunities there to begin to find ways to work our faith into conversation about relational skills, about EI. Any questions on that? You see how that would work? Okay. So why values? Values are a person's principles or standards of behavior, one's judgment of what is important in life. Okay, and as I said, almost everything we say and do, there's some underlying motivation, something of value there that is driving me to behave the way I do. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Okay, truer words were never spoken. We all have values that underlie our behavior and choices. They enrich conversations and opportunities. When we start getting down to a value level in a conversation with someone, we're really getting to know them. We really are beginning to understand what's important in their lives. And it's a wonderful opportunity to grow and to really create stronger relationships, which can ultimately lead to opportunities to share the Lord. I want to show two back-to-back videos. Let me explain what these are going to be and why I'm showing them. These are from an American television program called Blue Bloods. And the story is about a father and a son. The father is the former police chief of New York City, and the son is the current police chief of New York City. Okay. They are the two that appear in the first video. And they're talking about a very sensitive subject about whether the older man, the father, should still be driving. Okay? Anybody had that conversation with their mom or dad? I had it with both. And it was no fun. And it was a real battle. What you'll see in this first little clip, which lasts a couple minutes, I think of it as being similar to the kind of conversation I had with my athletic director. Not a lot of emotional intelligence, a lot of talking past each other, as you'll see. Now I'll stop it, and then I'll say, here's the second clip. In the second clip, what we'll see is the daughter of the current police chief, the granddaughter of the former police chief, has come into the room, and she's going to have a conversation with them. And it's a very different conversation. Okay? And you're going to see during this conversation, especially as she addresses her grandfather, that there are values which are brought to the surface. And just look and see what the difference is when those values become very much a part of the dialogue. Okay?
They were part of my day. They're my old men. Are you buttering me up for some reason, Francis? I'm just happy to see you, Tom. So, how was your day?
Great and happy. Yours?
You got something on your mind, Spit.
What makes you think I got something on my mind?
You're not the only guy in this room who used to wear gold sheep, Francis. When I was wearing mine, you were wearing diapers.
I did notice it was a pretty big dent in the bumper of your car. Here we go.
No, I'm just asking what happened.
No, you're insane.
I'm not insinuating anything.
You think I don't know what I'm doing behind the wheel anymore?
I'm just asking what happened to your car.
How would I know? I went into Ziggy's for lunch. I came out. I had a busted bumper.
So somebody hit you when you were inside?
Excellent police work.
And they didn't even know.
Are you finished?
Damn it, Pop. You shouldn't be driving.
Okay. Not a very productive conversation. Although, I think we're going to watch another one here okay. In just a second. You can turn it off.
Okay.
People can hear me. At least I think each guy knows what the other one is thinking, right? So it was good in that sense. Second one, watch the difference in this video and ask, what are the values that are being raised here?
Dad?
I'll let you two catch up.
No, we need to talk.
I have nothing to say.
Wait. Before you say anything, hear me out. Grandpa, ever since you put that ring on Grandma's finger, you have watched over this family with unconditional love and unwavering devotion. You gave each and every one of us the freedom to find our own way in the world and the room for us to make our own mistakes. And you were there to catch us before we fell too hard. We are who we are today because of you. We learned from the best. And you taught us that loving someone sometimes means asking them to do what they think is impossible.
Pop, you're my Mickey Mouse. So the last thing in the world I want to do is say you lost a step.
Dad.
what was different? What did Aaron do that the two men couldn't do? What did she bring other than hugging? What did she bring to the picture? When she was talking to her grandfather, she was doing what? She was affirming him. She was saying, here's what you've been to our family. Here's who you are. We are who we are because of you. We learned from the best. Okay? Lots and lots of value in him being conveyed. You're important. You are our leader. And you taught us that sometimes loving someone means having to say hard things. So the very fact that Erin is saying what she's saying to her grandfather is a reflection of what he taught all of them. Okay? Such a wonderful image of this man being valued, being honored, being respected. Everything he didn't get in that first conversation, right, with his son. Because it's hard. I mean, when you give up driving, you give up independence. Not only do you give up independence, but you're now dependent on other people to take you places where you could have gone before. And what else? It means you're getting older. I don't know how many of you know American baseball, the reference to Mickey Mantle there. Pop, you're my Mickey Mantle. He was a great baseball player during the 50s and 60s. So when you say he's lost a step, okay, that's what he means. You've slowed down. Okay, as you've gotten older, your reactions are no longer what they once were. So they're not having a conversation about emotional intelligence, and they're not having a conversation about relational wisdom. They're doing something even better. They're living it out. And what we can see, we don't know what Erin did to actually bring her own emotions under control, but we do see the outcome. We see the management in the way that she conducted the conversation. Okay. We don't know what emotion she was wrestling with, but she was sure prepared. She was deeply under control and knew exactly the kind of impact. And you can see how, knowing her grandfather and what's important, she really lifted that out and then put that before him and then said, this is who you are. This is the impact that you've had on our lives. And even at the end, where the current chief of police says, you know, this is who you are. You're my Mickey Mantle. You're my hero. You're the guy I looked up to. You are who I wanted to be when I grew up, and I followed in your footsteps. That's part of your legacy. That's your value to this family. And then actually being willing to hug each other, as hard as it is for guys to do that sometimes. I don't know, maybe you do that more in the countries that you live in than we do in the United States, but it doesn't happen in a whole lot. Okay, so a wonderful picture of how living this out can look. Okay, because, and our faith is based on values that endure. Now, we know the founder of our faith is a person, right? And that's one of the big differences between believers and unbelievers. But a lot of unbelievers love and treasure Christian values. They look at the life of Jesus and they say, he was a great moral teacher, right? He taught love. He taught peace. He taught grace. He taught mercy. All of these things that people value, they can look and they can see it in the life of Jesus. So even if we are having a, quote, lesser conversation where values is on the agenda, we can still faithfully represent what we see in Jesus and what other people see in Jesus as well. And it really does provide a foundation for being able to have a deeper and more meaningful conversation. Discussing values can open the door to share what's important in my life. Okay. Here's some practical ways. In addition to actually being in a conversation about emotional intelligence, okay, we can actually do some things to initiate a conversation. Here are some of the ideas that we had. Share blogs and articles on EI. Discuss practical applications and values. And I'll give you our website at the end. We've got a ton of material that you can go right on the website. If you're interested in this, if you want to learn more, and especially if you see opportunities to bring it into your family or your church or your workplace, encourage you to do that. Okay. Another way is to start a discussion group based on a book. such as the one on emotional intelligence by Dan Goleman. That can be a way to begin to bring this discussion together and strengthen relationships so that concerns and struggles are naturally shared. That's what we saw in this last bit. That's what we saw Aaron do. Strong relationship so that the concerns and struggles can be naturally shared. I'd like to finish up with a final video. And in this video, what we're going to see is an example of a man who is speaking truth into the life of a woman, okay, in a way that touches on all three of the elements. And as you listen to him, be listening to where he's talking about himself and the way he does that, the way he talks about the woman that he's counseling, okay, and how he brings God into the center of all of this. Now, the clip is from a movie called Mom's Night Out. It's about three families, really, and the wives in particular who are driven to being perfect. They're all American, and they want to be the perfect wife. They want to do everything right. They're extremely active. They are extremely anxious because they can't be perfect. And they take a night out to go out and have some fun together because they just need a break. They leave their husbands with the children. That's another part of the movie. It turns out a little bit disastrously. It's a fun movie. I recommend it if you want to see something. What happens here, something fun, what happens here in this clip is we see one of the women was wrongly arrested. She was mistakenly arrested. And so another of her friends and this guy, who's a big motorcycle gang member, okay, are down at the police station, a friend of theirs, down at the police station waiting for her to come out so that they can take her home. And they're going to have a conversation in which the woman begins to really let down what it's like to be her. And watch how this man deals with her circumstances and what it is that she shares with him. Okay?
No matter how hard I try, no matter how much I give, I'm not enough.
For who?
What?
Not enough for who?
I mean, Sean, the kids, for my mother, God, everybody, I don't know.
You? Not enough for you. I was raised in church. This might surprise you, but I have since drifted from the faith.
Shocker.
My mama worked three jobs. I never met my daddy. I had to get up early and walk to school, but I'd wait up for her coming home from the diner. I'd wait up every night. Because she'd come home, and she'd put me to bed, and she'd tell me something. She'd tell me the same thing every night. He loves you, Charles. No matter who you are, no matter what you do, or how far you run, Jesus will always be loving you with his arms open wide, just for being you. And I'd smile and go off to sleep. You know, I saw something on Pinterest the other day. It was an eagle just caring for its young. It's a beautiful thing to watch one of God's creations just doing what he made it to do. Just being an eagle. And that's enough. Y'all spend so much time beating yourselves up. Must be exhausting. Let me tell you something, girl. I doubt the good Lord made a mistake. giving your kiddos the mama he did. So you just be you.
This would be the two questions that I'd love for you to give some time thinking through. Where you are right now and what's going on in your life, in your circle. Are there opportunities to discuss EI, if not EI as a whole, then certainly relational skills, even one or two skills, and to begin to see ways that those conversations can be shaped to bring in values, that these skills I want to learn because there's something important that I want to accomplish, and here's what it is. And you never know, the Lord may provide an opportunity to even share and bring in our faith. Okay, so I'm going to let you do that on your own time. This is our website. If you'd like to know more about relational wisdom, go to rw360.org. We've got a ton of material up there. Most of it is at no cost. We do have an online course. I think the charge is $39 or something, but even that will give a scholarship. So if you're interested in that and would like even to have a scholarship partial funding, you can just go online and there's a form you fill out and we'll take care of you on that as well. Don't you love that? A biker who looks at Pinterest? Not what you'd normally expect. One of the big lessons there is you just never know what's going on in people's lives, who they are and where they've been and how God has worked. Okay, even better than talking about relational wisdom is being in a position to live it out. And isn't it neat how he was able to share his own life, and he was able out of that to speak into her life because of who God was and the message that he can give her about you be you and let God take care of the rest. So anyway, thank you so much for your time. You know, I think I forgot to pray at the beginning. So let me pray at the end and then I'll turn it over to you, okay, Farrell, and you can do the app. Okay, let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this time that we've had. Thank you for each person here. We pray that you would help us to live before you in ways that are not just emotionally wise, but that are relationally deep and seek to serve you, to love you, to serve and love others, even as we serve ourselves and love ourselves. We ask your blessing, Lord, on each of us. Help us to go out and do your work in the world, in the community and family to which you, in which you've placed us, in ways that speak to your glory and give you honor. We ask all of this in Christ's name. Amen.